So we're going to talk about Metasploit. You guys are pretty familiar with it already. So who am I? Chris Gates. I took a couple tests, passed a couple exams. Some of them took me more than once. Columnist on ethicalhacker.net. Vice President of Operations is a fancy title to say I do pretty much everything except take the money. Wrote courses, online mentoring, managed the website. I work for DoD. For my job, it pays the bills. It's not really that sexy. If you're really interested, come talk to me after. I don't really have a cool spook job or anything. So we're going to talk about Metasploit. What we're going to talk about is the background, the interfaces, the way you can interact with it, exploit types, your payload types, your auxiliary modules, and we're going to do a couple demos. So who wrote it? H.C. Moore with the first one. You had Spoon and Escape for the second. Three of those guys and a bunch more developers for the third. And obviously people, open source project, plenty of publicity now, plenty of people helping out with it. It's from the site. I put it in quotes because I stole it. Metasploit's just for creating security tools and exploits. It's used by network security professionals, pen tests, system administrators, yak yak. Most people probably use it for the pen test piece. I don't know, I doubt too many people are going to go through and make sure that it didn't break a Windows patch or anything. So what it is, it's libraries, modules, user interfaces, basically allows you to launch exploits and payloads. So what can I do? Reliable exploits, and that's really the big thing. Anything you download on Millworm's got a 50-50 chance of one compiling, two working. Hard to change the actual payload of what you get out of that exploit. So you can change payloads at runtime. So as you work through it, you can decide if you want to bind shell, reverse shell, BNC shell, interpreter shell, user add, whatever. It's got all the exploit dev tools. I'm not going to talk about that. If you're really into that, we can talk later or tomorrow. That's a whole day talk in itself, and H.D. Moore does it way better than I'll ever do. Lots of fun tools, the auxiliary modules, or basically anything that's not an exploit. And it's open source, so and the API is all open, so if you don't like the way something works and you've got enough programming skill, you can change it or build your own little fun stuff to play with. So the current one's written in Ruby, the old one's in Perl, runs on pretty much everything. Dependencies are pretty easy to get installed, apt-get, rpm, emerge, port for OS X. Windows has the installer. Kind of limited to using it just with the web interface, unless you want to run Siglin. But web interface does okay. It depends on what you're comfortable with. So this is kind of an overview. I don't have my mouse, but so basically, this is like a high-level overview of how it works. You got a milk on the right. You got your shellcode library that's generated. Your encoders that will encode that. You've got your exploit parameter, which is all the stuff that is exploit-specific. Your target values. All the options that I want to do for my attack, you launch the attack, you get your connection, and you have your payload handlers that manage all your payloads. And if you have any questions, stop. I mean, we're already behind, so I don't guess it matters if we ask questions, that's okay. So you got basically four interfaces. You could call the daemon one, but I didn't. If you want, you can. It's kind of a console. So you got the MSF GUI, just a little point-and-click action. Is it going? Okay, good. Your MSF web, basically just a website. You have your console inside of that. And so you can, if you want your MSF console, that's where you're going to use it on Windows. MSF console, that's kind of an example. You just set your host, set any values you need, your target, your payload, and hit the exploit button. And hopefully you get a shell. It'll work out. Your MSF CLI, which allows you to do scripting. Basically, it's the same thing as a console, but you can just do it in one line. And that's kind of an example of that. You want to use my Apache chunk 32 payload, reverse payload, localhost, local port, and remote host, and the E for execute. So we have all our exploit types. So pretty much any protocol is supported in the Rex library. You can check that out if you want to see if it has actually, if you want to build an exploit for a certain type. I didn't really see anything that wasn't, that they didn't have a protocol for. You can do active, passive, brute forcing, remote, local, and user interaction. Your user interaction ones are those point and click ones, social engineering ones that, hey, I'll send you an email, I'll send you a web page link where you got to click on it. Someone's got to click on it to work. local you can do, but you're running Metasploit on your local box, which means you probably don't need to do any kind of local attack. But you can do it. It's possible. There's libraries to do it. And I said, look, there's your user interaction ones, and there's an example. Your your browser exploits fall into that. Excuse me. So your definition of a payload, we're going to talk about payloads. It's an arbitrary code that is to be executed upon successful exploitation. Basically, your exploit does what it needs to do to cause a buffer overflow, heap overflow, whatever, and your payload is what you're trying to get. So how it works is the client prepares the payload for execution, usually uploading a stager. Data is embedded, your command, all the host names, if you're going to do a reverse shell back to you, whatever. The client will transmit the payload, and the target executes. Common sense, you guys probably already know that. These are the OSs that you can run the payloads. It has payloads for all your BSDs. Excuse me, Linux, Solaris, Sparknet, x86, OS X, PowerPC. That's pretty handy. Windows, Unix, and you have a couple PHP shells. You've got an inline and stagers. Your inlines are where it sends everything at once. Those are the small payloads. And you can tell us when you do your show payloads, it's going to be the shell underscore reverse underscore TCP. Your stagers are the ones that basically sends a small payload up, and then it uploads the rest. So you can, it allows for much larger payloads. Basically, that's all your big stuff. You want to, your interpreter DLL, your VNC, all that's going to be a little bit hot, more bytes than your standard reverse or bind shell. So, and you can tell that by the shell slash reverse is going to be your stager. So, if it really matters to you while you're working with the console, those are the two. Most of the time, you won't know the difference. Yeah. Most of the exploits it has enough room for shell code and things that you can pick whatever your fancy is of the day. There's your different types: your bind, reverse, your find tag, find port, reverse ord. Your NICs, add user, execute a command, shells. For Windows, DLL, inject, download and execute, upload and execute, VNC, interpreter, and then they have bind shells and PHP shells and Perl and PHP. So, one of the biggest things I had a problem with was, what do these different payloads do? Your bind and shell are pretty straightforward. Bind opens a port, reverse comes back. People don't usually need too much help with that. It's all these other fine tags, these little weird ones that you're like, well, why would I want to use that versus something else? So your fine tag is a socket style. It searches on a socket based on the presence of a 4-byte tag that it sends up and looks for that. Fine port is kind of similar. It's based on the port. Your ordinal one, I'm not going to try to explain this. There's like a 20-page white paper on it, and my eyes just got blurry when I tried to look at it. The easy way to think about it is, it uses libraries that are already on your Windows host to just kind of substitute for the payload. So it makes very tiny stagers. You got a 92-byte payload, stager, and a 93. Just kind of helps with the process. Your reverse HTTP, it was called your ActiveX payload in 2.x. Your PassiveX. Basically, it uses IE6. It downloads and executes an ActiveX control, downloads everything else through IE, and calls your custom DLLs, VNC, interpreter. Add user is kind of a net user add. Your download and execute downloads from the URL that you specify and the execute, and the executable that you specify and executes it for you. Upload and execute uploads from your host to the computer and executes. Execute will just do whatever command you want. DLL inject is if you have a custom DLL and you have enough Kung Fu to write your own, you can write whatever wrapper you want and upload that, run in memory. Pretty handy when you're all done. You reboot the box, it's gone. VNC inject and interpreter are kind of the same way. Once you reboot the box, they're gone. So those are pretty handy from the evasion cover your tracks point of view. Auxiliary modules, anything not an exploit. Discovery and fingerprinting. So some examples of that are your sweep UDP, your SMB version. They got some scanners that if anybody knows how to make those work, come see me because they never work for me. DC, RPC ones, HTT versions, put anything you can write. The API is huge. So anything you want to write, there's wireless stuff. I think I wrote wireless fuzzers. The wireless exploits that they did for like the Loracon drivers are in there. A couple of denial of service, things like that. Anything that doesn't necessarily have a payload. So here's kind of an example of the sweep UDP. I don't know if you can see that, but basically you set your class, I did a class C, it runs, it found NetBIOS, found SQL Server, if it's running port map you got, if you're running DNS, that will come up. Your SMB version, you can see it, we found NetBIOS on 128, 130, 132, so we can use the version to say, okay, let's run that. Okay, 128 is running Windows 2K, Service Pack 0 to 4. 130 is running Windows 2003, so pretty handy. It's sometimes hit or miss with it, depends on how you're doing. You find your SQL boxes on the network. You can use SQL ping to kind of pull down information. The version will allow you to go out on the web and you can see what version that is, what service pack your SQL server is running. You can also use MSQL logon, which will test for null SA accounts. You'd think you wouldn't see that, but I was helping a guy out with an audit, and we found two boxes that had null SA accounts. It's pretty 2002 or 2000 bugs, but it still happens. So we'll quickly talk about the console, and then we'll do the demo. Don, am I doing all right on time?
Yeah, man.
As long as everybody else is cool.
Okay. We're about to get to the fun stuff, I guess. Console, that's your bread and butter, powerful and fast. That's the way I really, if I'm teaching, I have them get on the console. It's really the easiest way to learn. It helps you. I won't say there's enough help to get a new guy through it, but if you kind of know what you're doing, there's enough help to muddle through it. It allows you to use system commands on the box, so if you want to run nmap or ping inside of the MSF console instance, you can. You have to be careful with that, especially if you're using like ping, which on Linux goes forever. If you don't put your count, you're going to control C out of that, and you're going to exit your instance, which kind of sucks. But it allows you to easily list what's available, payloads, configure everything. It's got global options with a setg command and tab completion, which is good for lazy people like me. So there's your help command. Basically, it helps you with all the commands that comes with it. Show exploits will show you everything it's got, which, you know, when I did these screenshots, it's like 217 exploits. So you'll get a whole ton of stuff scroll down past you, which is really not useful for you. But if you do know, if you want to attack a Linux host, you want to attack a Windows host OSX, you can do use exploit slash Windows OSX Linux, and that will sort them down into their categories. So it helps a little, and it's readable. For me, that's readable, because it starts saying, okay, do I want to use Windows antivirus, BrightStore, browser, SMB, whatever. It kind of sorts them a little where it's a little more readable, at least for me. Once you pick your exploit, you can do show info. It will give you basic information in that description. Some of the, depending on the exploit, you sometimes need to set certain like SMB pipe. If you're running against an XP box or a Windows 2000 box, you need to change that. So you kind of need to know what you're attacking. So that's a good opportunity. That is usually in the description. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. It's up to who wrote the module. So we set our remote host. We set our payloads. We're setting the payload Windows Shell Reverse TCP. We're using the stager. Show options is kind of your check. So if I'm doing a reverse command, I got to tell it what host to come back to. So you can do a show info to make sure you basically filled in all the blanks. Or if you want to make sure I wanted to do .130 for the remote host instead of 128 or whatever. You can double check your work. Okay. Show advanced is any advanced things. Sometimes there's stuff, you know, I don't know if the C host or C port or anybody is interesting for people. Show evasion is all the evasion things that are built into that. H.C. Moore and another guy gave a talk in Black Hat 2006 about it, and you'll get the old guys that have the slides. So it kind of explains what all those different options do for you. And we exploit. Basically launches it, kind of tells us what's going on, and we get our shell. So we've got some fun stuff I threw in that's there that nobody really knows how to do. It's your MSF daemon. Basically, that sets up a listening interface. So say you're me and Brian on our pen test, and we got our attack host, and we're going to send out all our phishing emails or whatever from this host. Well, we don't want to be doing other things on that host. So you can leave that there. I can set up an MSFD instance, and him and I can Telnet or Netcat into that instance and use it. And it's kind of like a central repository of, and it'll manage all those sessions for you. If you see it on the bottom, when you may not be able to see it, I'm basically netcatting into it and getting an MSF console. So if I have five guys on an assessment, we can all share the same instance and everything can kind of be in a central location for you. Changing the MSF web instance to listen on a different interface besides localhost, you can just use the dash A command, or you can edit the MSF web file, which is basically a executable text document, and you can change the host setting in there from localhost to whatever you want it to be. So it's handy if you're running, if you want to, not a smart move, but if you want to run it on a public IP, you can do it that way. So you can see I just did a screenshot, I've changed it. MSF payloads, pretty handy for upload and execute type payloads, or if you have a way of getting your executable on the victim's box, you can basically create an executable of any MSF payload that exists. So here I did a Windows VNC inject bind, called it bvnc.exe. You have to use your imagination to get it on the host to make it run, but you can do that. And once it's running, you can use the MSF CLI with the exploit multi-handler. That's kind of what will handle all that, and will connect to the remote host, and you'll get your VNC shell if everything worked out good. So that's kind of some shots of it working, and you get your VNC shell. So there's some fun links. Something to check out if you're into Metasploit is the Metasploit Exploit Builder by Jerome. It's kind of a big giant GUI that will kind of step you through the whole exploit dev process, which is kind of handy. If you guys checked it out yet over here, I know you guys are kind of into that. That's something worth checking out is the Exploit Builder if you guys have time. It's pretty handy if you're into the exploit dev stuff or trying to move into it. There's my thank you slide. Big thanks to H.D. Moore for actually giving me the bless off to talk about this stuff and making sure I wasn't telling lies, and for Don for having me come out. Contact info. So let's try to do some demos. We'll see how my luck's going tonight. Keeps people out of my tools directory. They'll come complaining if you ran something and it didn't go right. So, pretty user-friendly once you kind of get the hang of it. You can do your show exploits. And it does have tab completion, which is pretty handy. And I ran the command that probably takes the absolute longest to do. Okay, so there you go. So, that's not too useful for me if I'm looking for something. Maybe it's useful for other people, and if you can really spread the screen out, you maybe will get a lot of that. So you can use your exploit windows, tab. Do I want to display them all? Sure. And we can start kind of moving through them. So we've got our browsers, FTPs, whatever you want to look at. I'm going to do a VNC demo, but we'll use a browser exploit to do that, and then we'll do the SMB relay demo. Hopefully everything will work out. Do browser, and we'll do the WMF exploit. So we can do a info, which kind of tells us about it, what it's doing, who it exploits, who wrote it, things we got to fill in, your serve host, your port, if you want to change any of that, your URI path, which is basically the URL you're going to send to the person. We can show targets. This one we only have, this one it's automatic, so great. So we're gonna do do that to us. I'm gonna set our URI path to fun. Okay. Set a payload. So we basically say we're going to do a VNC inject, bind TCP payload. We're going to do a show options, so we want to check and make sure it being the biggest, kind of hard to see, but we want to make sure we basically filled in all the gaps and that everything is right. So, I think that's it. The rule kind of you got two options with the VNC one. It's this disable courtesy shell. Has anybody used the VNC inject payload? You guys probably have. Anybody seen that? When you do it, it basically gives you a command prompt, which is handy if you come across a locked desktop, because then you can just type explorer and it will unlock the desktop for you. You can still see the locked thing there, but you'll have interaction. You know, the drawback of that is if someone's sitting there, it just popped up a big giant blue command shell. So,
massively courtesy console.
Yeah. So, it's a little obvious. Someone just, you know, did something they weren't supposed to. If you guys want to see it unlock, you guys want to see the thing unlock, or do you care? Sure. Let's lock it. All right. Okay. So we need to set to true, because it's automatically set to false. So I want to disable it. Hopefully I didn't just misspeak. So we're going to exploit. So basically it says we're running running a background job. This is the URL that they're going to have to browse to make it work. Well, you know what? Kind of a bad example since I kind of have to log on to click it. Oops. So ideally, you wouldn't type it in the browser. You would have sent them something that said, "Hey, click on me. I'm fun," you know. So, one second, while I own you. So we're uploading it. So basically, you can see it doing its magic, and you can see it's where it's talking about this transmitting internet intermediate stager. That's when we talked about the stagers. So we sent 89 bytes, and then we sent, you know, the 2,000 bytes after that. So once we got everything started. Takes a second, but you come up and it's slow. Imagine trying to do this across the internet. So there you go. You got your VNC prompt. You can do whatever you want to do on the box. Kind of fun, I guess. What do you guys think? Handy on a LAN. Like I said, when you're trying to push a GUI across, who knows, coming from, you know, wherever, it can kind of take a while. Yeah, it's and trying to do that. There's some talk on using the VNC to use that MSF payload to do that. Well, it's a one shot deal with that. Plus, half the time it'll crash on here, it won't work. There's a lot of things. Exploits flaky, but it gets the job done. It can serve the purpose if you're just trying to do a demo for somebody.
How about now? No?
Yes? There we go. How about now? Am I in the dead spot, or is it working?
Maybe.
Oh, well. All right. So let's see how my luck's going to do. We're going to try to do this SMB relay one. They also has a pretty cool PS exec module. If you came across admin credentials one way or the other, if you're using Brian's technique of sniffing the network and you pulled across someone's RDP credentials, I can basically get a shell from that using the PS exec payload, which is pretty handy. I'm going to do an info on that. So basically all this says is, hey, this guy back in 2001 was doing a pass the hash exploit. And same thing. We're going to set our box to be the thing they're going to have to connect to. Payload. Because it's going to start a listener on 139, you got to do, you got to start it as root. Oh, I did it twice. Good for me. All right, now it's listening. And we'll cross our fingers. Yeah, of course you did. So what I've done is, I should have showed you what I was doing before I did that, but basically I've embedded a link to a fictional share. So when it opens this HTML page, it should try to browse to me. Okay, great, you don't want to work. Should have tried to browse to me to do that. So let me try to log back out and log back in to do that. Because if you want to do it on a domain environment, it's got to be able to talk to the domain controller. So it's kind of hit or miss on it. This one doesn't work. It will work almost every time local. Some of the caveats to that is you have to be in the admin group, because the exploit writes to the admin dollar share. That's where it writes the executable. So you're going to have to be a local admin or have admin privileges on the domain. Or if you're doing it on a local host, it has to have a password set, and you need to be a local administrator again so you can write to the admin dollar shine share. Currently, the way I understand it, it only works with NTLM v1. And like I was saying before, if SMB signing is turned on, it's probably not going to work. So that kind of really narrows the attack vector on that, but still fun. It's always fun to do stuff you're not supposed to do. So let's see if we have any better luck. In the interest of, I want you guys to really see it work. Let me log out again. And I'm going to log in on the box. And if anybody wants to wait around, I know you guys got stuff to do. So if anybody wants to see me screw with it and try to make it work on the domain, we can do it after. Oh, there we go. Yay. So you see it's connecting to me. There's the username. It's better when it says your domain and your username. So you can see that's logged on from that machine. My name's passed the LANMAN hash to it. I've authenticated as me. I'm connecting to the admin dollar sign. Randomly creates an executable for you. It does write a registry key that basically installs this as a service. That's kind of how it's working. And it will keep doing it a few times. We'll send it a note saying, hey, no, I already did that. Don't worry about it. So we can do a sessions, -l, to list the active sessions. So, hey, we got our command shell. We can do sessions, -i, 1, to interact with it, and we got our shell. See if it takes all day to do that. That's pretty much it. If you guys have any questions, I'll take them. Nope, want to go home? Okay. Well, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.